This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey. Chapter 13. When Tom awoke, the dim light of day dulled the room, the fire a cold pile of grey ash that matched the sky beyond the window. The storm continued to shake the cottage. To the boy, it had raged unabated for most of his existence. He was stiff, his neck pushed up against the sofa's armrest, the cushion on the floor, his legs curled to his chest. Catriona was gone. He slowly stretched to full length and listened. Her voice feathered through the walls as she talked to her uncle in the next room. There was no rumbling answer. He was warm under the blanket, and the damp air in his face caused him to huddle deeper beneath its cover. He thought about his situation. Despite his ordeal, he was physically well. His ankle, his shoulder, his aching head had all recovered. He was hungry again, but it was a healthy hunger, his body craving fuel for a life worth living. He knew his name and felt a passionate longing to know more. He looked to the door and recalled the ghost as though she had reappeared at his bidding. This was a talent he began to recognise as a gift or a curse. His short-term memory and his imagination forged a cinematic Picasso, tantalising, disturbing, confused. Once again he was able to alter the view he had of her, arms outstretched, inviting an embrace, laughter lines creased. Tom imagined himself enfolded by those arms and enjoyed the simple pleasure of the thought, a brief escape from isolation. He noted that the sense of familiarity he felt earlier was still there. So too was the yearning to recover something elusive. Its name, this elusive concept, was beyond his grasp, but somehow recognised by him as more precious than all his other memories combined. He should have been desperate to leave Craigan Cottage, but he wasn't. True, his hosts were acting strange. There was something beyond the story they'd fed him about an uncle and a niece getting away from it all. On the other hand, he was responsible for the man's injury. Despite his initial reaction, Tom firmly believed that the giant had actually saved him. His reverie ended when Catriona entered the room with yet another hot drink. Trapped by the storm and fighting the constant dampness, hot liquid punctuated their hours like those of suckling infants to the comfort of their mother's milk. "How are you?" she asked, passing him the mug. She flopped into the big armchair and Tom swung his feet around and sat, yoga style, with the blanket still covering him and facing her. "I feel fine," he said. "Your uncle?" Her expression darkened. "Don't know. He says he's okay, but that means nothing. He needs to see a doctor. And so do you, she replied. You mentioned something about a village. Lochranza, about 10 miles by boat, or you can go over the mountain. It's shorter, but in this storm too dangerous. How long will it last? I hoped it would have blown out by now, but as they say, you don't come here for the weather. Tom scanned the room for a TV. Katriana saw this and answered the question as it formed in his head. I don't know if we can get a signal, but it doesn't matter, because we've no radio or TV, no forecast. Tom looked at the remains of the fire. I should relight that. Katriana shook her head. We don't have enough wood. We'll keep the one going next door as long as we can. If it gets too cold, we can sleep on the floor in there tonight. Tom looked at the pathetic jumble of sticks next to the hearth. Small twigs, broken branches, the odd plank of wood splintered into manageable chunks. One thin piece had the words Fraserburgh Fish stenciled on it in faded blue lettering. I could get some more. I take it that's driftwood. She nodded her head. Mostly. The storm will have thrown up a good supply. But we should wait until it dies down. Anyway, unless we get lucky, the wood will be wet for days. Over the next hour, Tom learned that Katriana was originally from Dumfries in the south, but had lived in Glasgow for years. Her uncle, for that's what she continued to call him despite stumbling on the word every time she used it, still lived in their hometown. Tom tried to learn what he could about the history of their shelter, but apart from the fact it was called Craigan Cottage, was on Arran, and that a friend of her uncle owned it, Katriana was as clueless as he was. Why is it so important? She asked, once she realised that his persistence was driven by more than curiosity. It's difficult to explain, he began. He stopped, wondering how to prevent himself sounding madder than he felt, but when he realised that this was impossible, he just came out with it. I've been here before. Katriana's eyes widened as though in shock. Her reaction was not what he expected. She suddenly seemed frightened of something. And then, as quickly as the expression came, she relaxed and smiled. That's great, Tom. Perhaps you're local. Lochranza, maybe. Tom shook his head. I mean here. Craigan Cottage. The ghosts. I can't explain how I know, but they're real. What if... But Tom interrupted her, certain now what he wanted her to do, determined not to pause in case he lost the courage to ask her. Will you do something for me? He asked. Of course. What? This woman. She was terrified of something. Warned me to leave. He tried to recall her words, but found himself dwelling on the image of the heart-shaped stone instead. Katriana saw him rub the tips of his fingers together as he imagined the glass-like surface slide over his skin, its cool beauty reflecting the perfect neck his mind placed it upon. I need to find out who she is. I want to speak to her. The shocked look returned and the girl shook her head as though denying him his own thoughts. I want you to perform a séance, he said. Now. Chapter 14. Katriana's refusal was emphatic.
You don't know what you're asking, Tom. I'm asking for my sanity, for your help. The best help I can give is to say no.
And so no it was. By late afternoon, the storm had abated and small patches of blue sped across the sky to the hills in the north. The man, Callum was his name, lay awake and in pain for hours. Tom overheard the heated exchange between him and Katriana. His own name fired like bullets in the fight. When she returned from the latest bout, she donned her coat, the yellow-red garment he'd worn in the boat, and tossed Tom the man's.
Let's get some wood, she said.
Tom pitched a tarpaulin-sized jacket around his shoulders and wormed his hands through the wind-soaked sleeves. The baggy tent hung below his knees and disappeared his fingers, so that he had to turn the cuffs again and again to be able to see his hands. Outside, the wind scudded above the hills, leaving the land at sea level virtually untouched. The lazy sea undulated, spotlit by a travelling shaft of sunlight, slanting on a glittering swell of fragmented fire. Turning right, the pier picked along the edge of the bay, a natural catchment, it seemed, for the detritus ejected by the storm. They passed an enormous twisted branch, a sculptured effigy of a petrified sea monster that was too big to carry. They continued their search, clambering over weed-covered rocks that slithered and popped underfoot until they reached a tiny churning inlet, its cargo of flotsam smashed to thoughtful sizes just big enough and small enough to be perfect. Tom worked silently. Buoyed by the heady buzz of physical exercise, he and Catriona ferried their loads back to the cottage, spreading them on the lawn in tidy lines to dry. Tom carried a small bundle into Callum's room. The man glowered at him as he worked. Tom noticed this and tried to shake the belligerent stare. "How are you feeling, Mr. Callum?" His words could have been poison darts spitting across the room. The man's face twisted in pain and he barked,
"I'll be fine."
Tom wanted to apologise for the incident on the dinghy, but the giant turned his gaze to the ceiling and whispered,
"Close the door behind you."
Tom flickered a weak smile and left to join Catriona outside. Spotting her lying on a column of rock, he climbed the 10-metre face to join her. The clouds continued to disperse, the occasional blue hole now a patchwork of drifting fluff and clear sky. The sun baked the flat rock, steaming its wet surface to a wispy haze, placing Catriona in a surreal bed of living stone. "Your uncle doesn't like me. He thinks you're trouble." He might be right. The girls were out again, this time joined by sleek white birds that Tom knew instinctively to be terns. They flew over the water, scanning the ever-quietening surface, diving suddenly in folded wings and dagger beaks to spear the sea. The storm over, Tom looked across the water to distant hills and, shrunken by that distance, a parade of wind generators, shining like miniature baton-twirling majorettes. He sat beside the girl, trying not to stare as he took in the gloss black of her hair pillowing her head, her dark eyes squinting at the sky. He lay back with his elbows propping him at a tilt and watched the birds. There was so much he wanted to say. The weather clearing, he was no longer trapped. He refreshed his determination to go for help. According to Catriona, there was a path over the hill. He could be in Lochranza in a few hours, looking for a boat to ferry the injured man to hospital. But when he suggested this to the girl, her answer only deepened the mystery of who she really was.
"We can look after ourselves, Tom."
A dark cloud stood out from its white cotton wool surroundings. Staring at it absently, the boy noted, with vague disinterest, that its individuality did not stop at its brown colour. If it wasn't for Catriona by his side, he would have been intrigued by its movement beyond the subconscious stirrings of curiosity flittering through his mind. The cloud moved towards them as its companions drifted left towards the northern highlands. The observation bubbled to the surface when the mass suddenly swooped right and he realised that the cloud was not a cloud but a swarm or a flock or even an isolated flurry of living rain. The movement caught his attention but his focus remained on Catriona's words. Her independence did not surprise him. In the short time he'd known her, he'd expected little else. He stared at the shifting cloud, his brain and vision momentarily coalescing to form surprise, the notion that something required his attention. As a part of him struggled with the enigma of the girl by his side and the curious event in the sky, both were interrupted by the sharp bark of a dog on the hill behind them. Tom felt Catriona stiffen. He turned to look for the source, but the girl was quicker, reacting, it seemed, with the reflexive speed of a child scalded by fire. She jumped from the rock, sinking into the pebbled beach with a gravelly crunch and ran for the cottage. She stopped, and Tom saw her dilemma as she turned back towards him. He could not see the dog, but a man, rucksack on his back and a stick angled over his shoulder, descended the hill directly behind Cregan. The walker concentrated on the surety of his feet and appeared unaware of their presence.
Quick, said the girl under her breath. He can't see us.
This statement encapsulated everything that made no sense about the girl and the companion she called her uncle. Here they were, trapped in need of help, Tom with his aberrations and the man with his injured leg. And all Catriona could think of when help arrived was to hide. Tom joined her, noting the panic in her eyes as she flicked her attention to the man and back to Tom. The stranger disappeared below the roof as he dropped down the steep path behind the cottage. They had seconds to act before he would emerge from the side of the building. Tom joined the girl in one easy bound, bending his knees and touching the beach with his left hand to soften the noise of the jump. Catriona grasped his hand and together they bolted for the door. Tom had no idea why they were doing this, but the electric shock of Catriona's hand in his gave him something else to think of.
Damn!
Catriona spat under her breath. Crossing the lawn, she saw the parade of drying driftwood, an advertisement for the presence she sought to conceal. She skipped over a line of wood, but as she stretched for the doorknob, a cute brown and white beagle frolicked around the corner and yapped so loud and unexpectedly that Catriona cried out in fright. The dog spun on the spot and vanished the way it came. Catriona regained her momentum and threw open the door, but it was too late. A man's voice, bright as the post-storm day, exploded the girl's hope of remaining incognito as surely as the remains of the splintered boat lying on the seabed close by.
Don't be frightened, lass. She's a bairn. She'll no touch you.
And at these words, the couple stopped and turned to face the man.
DreamWorks.com.